Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network and our program on the third Sunday of each month, Moving Forward. I'm your host, Kelly KJ Jones, brain injury survivor and now life coach. And my co-host, Dr. Valentina, a neuropsychologist who will be here to discuss the emotional aspects beyond our physical injuries. Moving Forward will host candid discussions with persons who have experienced a brain injury and certified clinicians who have assisted survivors. Their insight on discovery, the line between pain tolerance and pain threshold, and pathways to success will provide hope and more options on how to build momentum for a sustainable recovery. Dr. Valentina, are you here today?
I sure am. How are you, Coach KJ?
Good, good, good. Happy Sunday.
Hey, how are you doing? How has it been this past month, or has it been two? I think I was on vacation last month.
You were on vacation. Where'd you go?
We went to Phoenix, Arizona.
Ooh. And what'd you do?
Yeah, that was when it was 118 degrees. But, of course, we didn't spend any time outside until we were like, you know, until it was maybe 6 p.m. and the sun wasn't as strong. We got in that pool and that Airbnb, and it was just perfect. It reminded me of the water in Puerto Rico, just nice and warm, you know?
Wow. But they think the humidity is not that great there, so it's kind of okay.
It's perfect because as far as that goes, because there is no humidity. So, yeah, it's just that temperature versus the sweating and the, you know, difficulty breathing because the air is sort of filled with water. Yeah, no, it was just straight 118, no humidity.
Wow. Wow. That's one of the places I've always wanted to go.
Yeah, I understand why people retire there. Now I get it.
Wait, was it Phoenix or Scottsdale?
Yeah, we were in Scottsdale, but people tend to go to, you know, Arizona, I think Phoenix specifically, when retiring, and now I get it. Like, I totally get it. And it really does remind you that it used to be Mexico because, you know, it kind of looks like it, and you get the people and the food and, you know, the cactuses and, you know, so it's just really cool. Like, it's really cool being out there.
Wow. Did you see any cowboys?
No. Remember, we were not outside like that. We got in the car, went to the restaurant, got back in the car, home, car to the store. You know, like, so no,
It would have been nice to put the car in the store, right?
Right, exactly. And the mountain, oh, I forgot about the mountain. It's just beautiful, like, so beautiful.
Wow, probably nice sunset.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. Hey, Dr. Valentina, like Wednesday, maybe 3-4 days ago, there was an article that I read about, and I read about it, but they also had the video. I didn't watch the video, but it was in D.C., and they were talking about how now the emergency room doctors are asking for help because they typically see about a half million persons in the psychiatric ward or receive a psychiatric evaluation.
Yes.
But now they're seeing, and it was like 30 people a month, but now they're seeing like 30 people a day.
What?
A day.
That's
and
interesting.
Yeah, it's an NBC article. I'll find the link and I'll send it to you. But it's NBC on emergency rooms, but it's the American Academy of Pediatrics and two other organizations
yes.
have worked together.
Yes.
It's a joint agency. It's three. Work together
yes.
with this request to get more assistance in the emergency room. And I'm thinking that if people
mm-hmm.
are coming to the emergency with this dire crisis, that there may have been
yes.
some things that happened along the way before they got
yes.
to that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And just speaking
mm-hmm.
with you, speaking with people, et cetera, they're very afraid of getting a diagnosis. I know I'm talking a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a second. They're very afraid of getting a diagnosis. So
mm-hmm.
the question that I wanted to ask you about is
mm-hmm.
that here, one of the things that they do is they practice something called brief therapy.
Yes,
can you
okay.
talk a little bit about brief therapy and whether diagnosis is required and how someone is sent to referred to you for brief therapy? I also want to admit, I also wanted to say that our neighboring university, NC State University, just hired 50 health professionals, mental health professionals, I guess, with varying
mm-hmm.
capabilities. To work on that campus. So as you can
okay.
see, mental health is a big issue here, and I was wondering if you could help with, you know, maybe helping to reduce that backlog at the ER.
Exactly. Yes. So I can tell you, brief therapy, like any psychotherapy, requires a diagnosis. Now, you don't, of course, you know, you have to come in with an issue that is clinically significant, meaning that it is negatively impacting your life. You know what I'm saying? And so that's what it would be if you're driven to therapy, right? Because you're going outside of now your family, you're going outside of your family and friends, you know, for help. And so it would be basically 5 to 8 sessions in length. Of course, a diagnosis would have to be generated by the clinician because that's the only way that insurance will cover, you see what I'm saying, the service, right, that would be covered otherwise by the insurance. Like, you know, they won't count it as therapy if it's not some clinically significant issue. Now, what I do typically when a person doesn't meet a full-on diagnosis, because if they do, then that's where brief therapy isn't really the best fit. It's more that longer term, like 8-plus sessions. But if a person could be seen within 8 sessions, then it's probably an adjustment disorder that's unspecified. Like, it doesn't necessarily meet the criteria for full-on major depressive disorder or full-on anxiety, you know, some type of anxiety disorder, whether PTSD or, you know, a social anxiety disorder or some kind of phobia, panic, you know, disorder. But it may be something like panic attacks, right? Panic attacks isn't a diagnosis. Panic disorder is, meaning this fear of having panic attacks, right? Like, because you've already had
right.
it and now you're fearful that you're going to have, right? So it has to be to that degree to be covered by the insurance. However, a clinician like me, if a person's having a panic attack, you know, and they really want to learn some good skills to keep from having one, because it's scary, right? Like, my understanding is that they mimic that of heart attacks, which is why people find themselves in the ER, because they think they're having a physical issue, right, that can be treated by a medical doctor, when in fact, after they run tests, they show that your heart is very well functioning, right? And so that's when they then refer to, like, a mental health provider or recommend that a person see, you know, somebody like me. So I instead might diagnose, like, an adjustment disorder with anxious mood or something that's somewhat light, right? It's not to the severity of, like, a full-on anxiety disorder, you know, but it's clearly an issue. You know what I mean? And so
mm-hmm.
we can always say something to adjust. Like, if they're having the same thing with when somebody, you know, passes away, like, your job isn't probably going to give you the amount of time that you may need to grieve, right? What do they do, like 3 days, two weeks, I don't know, right?
Mm-hmm.
Without you using your PTO, you know what I'm saying? You have to, if you're going to go on, like, an FML, for example, which would be warranted depending on what the person's going through and their ability to concentrate or operate or leave their home if their family member, you know, suffers something mm-hmm. very terrible, then that too will warrant therapy, which could potentially be handled briefly, but it still would be over the course of that 5 to 8 weeks, I mean, sessions, which is the equivalent of 5 to 8 weeks, you know what I mean, that you wouldn't otherwise be able to get off of work. So, yeah, it would probably be like an adjustment. I just say it like that so people would know. They don't have full on, serious, what they might think of serious disorder in order to be able to get good care.
So with the adjustment disorder, I want to make sure, the adjustment disorder, what happens is the person comes to you, right? They schedule an appointment, and when they mm-hmm. meet with you, you're able to mm-hmm. say whether it's an adjustment mm-hmm. disorder or it's a full-out diagnosis.
Exactly. But
and
the
so
fact
when
of the matter
do,
is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Well, just that the fact of the matter is, like if we're talking brief therapy, it's probably an adjustment type disorder, because if it's anything greater than that, then you're going to need more than a brief. See, we're talking just about brief, right? So,
right.
So if it's more than an adjustment disorder, then obviously it's going to require more than them 5 to 8 sessions. You know, now
right.
a person could terminate sessions whenever they want to. They're not obligated to stay in treatment. I mean, that's even noted in the treatment plan when you consent to treatment, that you are not being obligated, that you can leave the relationship, you know, the therapeutic relationship without any consequence to you, as long as you're following whatever the termination policy is. I mean, you know, like the cancellation mm-hmm. policy is, which is, for me, you know, 48-hour notice. For other people, 24-hour notice. But, you know, something where
okay.
you're not you know, but in the end, yeah, brief therapy, it's very strength-based. It's very solution-focused. It's all about solving a problem. And it's a problem that's kind of immediate, right? It's not some like, long-term issue that, like, for example, a person's finding themselves getting with the same type of, you know what I mean, guy. Then this is clearly rooted probably in your childhood, which is going to require more than 8 sessions, right? But you can start with the 8 if that's all you got, or the 5, you know, and get some skills, right, mm-hmm. and take it out into the real world, and then potentially find your way back if you like, right? You know what I mean? So
right. Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Valentine, I just want to ask you something really quick. So, number one, you don't need a diagnosis to get brief therapy. Number two, it's a shorter period, 5 to 8 weeks, and you're resolving a problem. It's focus on something immediate. But then number three, I was wondering, does the insurance cover brief therapy?
So this is what I was saying, that number one, you do need a diagnosis. Like, you don't, obviously you don't come in with the known diagnosis. You just come in with your symptoms, the issue at play. And it's on the clinician to diagnose. You have, what I'm saying is, in order for three to be a yes, the insurance company to cover, you know, the service, right, which is mm-hmm. individual therapy, it has mm-hmm. to come with a billable diagnosis, right? That's why I said it should be something like adjusted. Yes, adjustment disorder
is a billable diagnosis.
It is.
So,
it's an ICD-10 and F-code type diagnosis that is billable and recognized. So that's what I'm saying. Like, you do need one, but it doesn't have to be some major, you know what I mean, diagnosis. It could be something like an adjustment disorder.
So just one last question. With an adjustment disorder, does somebody have to put that on a job application? You know how they go through the list
absolutely
of all the
things? Absolutely not.
If somebody comes to you with an adjustment disorder, number one, it's 5 to 8 sessions. Number two, it's something that needs to be done immediately. Number three, mm-hmm. it is billable through the insurance. And number four, it will not be on a job application.
Right. And I mean, really, remember two things to say to that. The first is they don't come in knowing that they have an adjustment disorder. They just come in like any other person, knowing that all they want is brief therapy to deal with relational issues or panic attacks or anxiety, whatever, grief and loss, whatever, relationship, I mean, career problems, whatever the issue is, like anybody else will come through the door, but it may just be that they're very clear that I'm only interested in brief therapy. You know what I mean? That's rare though, right? Most people come in not saying how long they expect the therapy to be. They might ask questions just out of curiosity, but they don't come in, you know what I mean? Like, I just
right.
want a session, unless they have some kind of EAP program that will only pay for, you know what I'm saying? five sessions at your job or something, and, you know, and then they wouldn't even be coming to me. They'd be coming, they'd be going to the people that's listed on their, in their job, you know, that, that, that the resources where it tells you who you can go to. So it's that they just come in with whatever the issue is, and it's me on the back end when I'm submitting the note, right, to the insurance company having to say this is an adjustment disorder, right, because it's not a full-on just issue, right? But if it is a full-on issue, then that's what I'm diagnosing, whatever I have, whatever is appropriate. And then the fact of the matter is, too, you said, what was the last thing that you brought up?
That it doesn't need to be on the job application. But the big thing, Dr. Valentina, that I was trying to emphasize is that some people will wait to go to the ER because they don't want to get the diagnosis. So,
well, the ER is going to diagnose, though. They're going to diagnose because that's what they do. Remember, you cannot... The first of all, the medical industry is a problem-focused industry. So they're going to always find a problem. You see what I'm saying? And they're going to diagnose. I mean, that's just that's, and then again, that's how the service gets compensated. Now, it's true they're not going to make up something, right? So they will say, yeah, it's not a heart issue. It's a mental health issue. But then they're going to diagnose that mental health issue. And their diagnosis might be premature, right? Because they don't really know the person. You know, they're kind of making an assessment briefly. You see what I'm saying? It's the psychotherapist who, after the maybe third session, will be able to say, yeah, this is really what's going on. But the first sessions, we all typically, those of us who are really, like, good and careful, we'll start off with these adjustment disorders unless the person's issue is that obviously severe. Right. But either way, whether it's severe or not, it would never show up on a job application unless the client themselves wrote it on there. And why would they do that, right? Nobody outside of them has the right or ability to out them. You know what I'm saying? That would be a violation of the law.
Of HIPAA, probably. Okay.
That's it.
All right. Well, listen, Dr. Valentine, I think that you have given some major, major points. I was just trying to get that whole brief therapy out there because, once again, like I said, right now, there is a huge mental health crisis. People are waiting until the last minute. And when they're waiting until the last minute, then they are going to get the diagnosis. And once again, the hospitals are not equipped to handle that. And, you know, from 30 a month to 30 a day, they're just not ready for it.
That's unbelievable. I want to say this last thing, too. I think that part of why, because I'm always trying to understand the why, you know, that people are finding themselves, like, overwhelming perhaps the emergency room is because mental health treatment is much more stigmatized than like medical treatment. You know what I'm saying? So if we could get away from like, you know, if we could first of all understand why mental health is stigmatized, then we'll understand like why the agenda to like the narrative, right, has been pushed that this is so bad. It's really that this is how you get to the root and fix the issue. And they don't necessarily want you to do that, right? And so then they're going to discourage you from going that route. But that's the route that's going to teach you how to manage and overcome your issues. Now, the medical industry is also, you can believe it, they're more about like their form of treatment is drugs, right? So if we're talking about a psychological issue, then it's going to be a psychiatric drug. And I think people don't want that, which is why they wait last minute to get help. They wait until they're in crisis to then seek the help that's marketed. You see, but really they don't want that in the first place because they're worried about the side effects or whatever. So we just got to get the information out. You know, like a lot of my clients come by word of mouth because, you know, people are, they finally try it out and they love it. And then they start talking to their cousins about it. They have no shame. And then their cousins are like, well, I want to see her, you know? And so then that's good that my team is expanding because I could refer them to one of my buddies who's in my practice, you know?
So Dr. Valentine, you are phenomenal. And I love what you're saying. And I love how you are helping so many people because we do need to help more people, obviously, if the rates are up that high. But let me tell you somebody who has some solutions. And she's on the line, and she's phenomenal. And wait to hear about Dr. Harris. Dr. Harris is a dynamic professor of women and gender studies, sexuality, health, and identity, hip-hop culture, all right? Hip-hop popular culture, and African-American history. She is a conqueror who has overcome many obstacles ranging from childhood money bullying, and I know you probably see some of that, to an excruciating diagnosis for her son to a blood pressure of, are you ready for this, 230 over 100.
Wow.
Yes. She assumed she was healthy, but was not. Initially, she took medication to get down her blood pressure, right? But there was no end game for the medication. So she stated, so she started to research natural remedies and food. I know you're going to love this, food benefits. Next, during a physical for insurance, right? She's thinking she's cool. Everything's good, right? She learned her glucose was elevated, and she had already changed her diet, right? She's already in the moving forward with health. She began to work with a full onslaught of medications and dietitians. Basically, not bad, you know. She's not bad for themselves, but her gut said, wait a minute, not do anything just yet. Do your research. So she did her research, right? Well, we know the research worked because today Dr. Felicia Harris can boast of running how many? 19 half marathons and one full marathon. And she's also a member of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated. And she's also a graduate of UNC Chapel Hill. So go Tar Heels. Dr. Harris, are you here with us today?
Yes, ma'am. Can you hear me?
Yes. Welcome. I'm sorry. You know, Dr. Valentina and I, every once in a while we get going, and I didn't mean to make you wait so long. But I am super-duper excited to hear your story. And actually, some of the stuff that you were talking about with regards to historical implications, et cetera, that you talked about earlier. Hello?
I'm still here. Are you asking me? asking me a care. Yeah, so thank you so much for having me on the line. It's a pleasure and honor to share. And part of my ministry is to share. If it helps one person, that's one person that helps. And like Dr. Valentino was saying, word of mouth is powerful. One person talks about it and shares it, and then someone else, you know, learns from it and shares it. And that's how we can really, you know, move forward, especially with some of these metabolic syndrome types of illnesses that we continue to find, you know, in our community. Something as simple as, you know, if you don't know, you don't know. Magnesium is a simple solution for blood pressure. But if no one says magnesium, African Americans, we tend to, not all African Americans, but larger populations of us, our magnesium is low. Something as simple as eating watermelon, even though it's stigmatized. Think about it. It's stigmatized. People are like, oh, joke. You know, all African Americans particularly like watermelon, when actually when you look at some of the data from the Department of Agriculture, actually, there are other populations that consume more than we do, but it's become so stigmatized. But if we actually look at some of the benefits, vitamin K, all of these, are, you know, hydration, when we are not hydrated, what it happens is it, of course, affects our magnesium, which then, you know, makes us be more at risk, you know, for things like high blood pressure or and forgive me if I don't use the D word, diabetes, because it really is a lot more. I can't stand that word. I'm sorry. When we have millions of people across the country and across the world, there is something else going on, you know, and there are solutions for. There are actually solutions for. So, you know, part of, like I said, part of my ministry is just to share. Part of my ministry on get your health back on track is just that. Everybody gets off the train, but guess what? You can get back on.
That's right.
Get back on.
That's so true.
Off the train again. You can get back on And don't,
that's
you
a
know,
big deal that you're saying that. I just got to say that because a lot of people, I feel like that they come to me so hopeless, like, you know what I'm saying? And really what you're doing is you're instilling hope because you're letting them know just because you fell off don't mean you can't get back on. It's okay. You know,
okay.
You can get back on. Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I didn't mention is Dr. Harris ran track at UNC Chapel Hill.
Wow.
So she was on the track. She was a superstar runner. Wait, tell us a little bit about your running and everything, because I would like to hear how you went from running to actually kind of a 230 over 100 blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, again, my background, I was looking at some pictures on. My mom was showing me some pictures last week. But anyway, I've always been running. And I guess as a second to the oldest, you know, the oldest think they can tell you what to do and push you around and pick on you. And my auntie is about the same age as my sister and myself. And so I would always see pictures and I would say to them, look, you are always were messing with me. But I was always running away. And I think Ms. Jones mentioned the bullying, and at the time that I was at Carolina, I don't think I really knew that's what it was. That wasn't the language that we used for it in our community. People just said, oh, they picking. But once I think I took, it might have been a psychology class, and they were talking. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay, so that's what was going on with us. Mm-hmm. The children on the bus, you know, wouldn't let us sit down. We'd stand up, and I grew up kind of right on the beginning of busing, and so most of the schools that I went to were already integral. By the time I went to public school, schools were already, but we were bused, and so when I was younger, we were riding the bus. It was like a 35, 40-minute one-way bus ride.
Wow.
And we were the last ones to get on the bus, so the kids were just mean, you know.
Wow.
And we didn't even think about it because we were like, okay, they're mean. And I really figured out, and I think I mentioned in some of the materials, that, you know, the kids were mean because we had the only running water bathroom inside the house at the time. We didn't think about it. We were like, oh, okay. But that whole row of homes where our house was, everybody, if you can believe it, still had outhouses. And, you know, when you think about it that way, then, they're going to have some other, you know, psychological or whatever issues related to, you know, those environmental things that they were exposed to every day. You know, you're not really inviting people over, you know, because you got a pot that you. So once I figured it out at that age, oh, okay, this is probably what's going on, and I didn't, you know, hold it against.
Wow.
I got to ask you this. So you're saying that you grew up in basically a rural area, right?
Mm-hmm. It was considered. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, so we went to county schools.
I want to see how rural you were. When I used to go visit my grandma in North Carolina, my mom would send me with these, like, beautiful shoes and all that other kind of stuff, and they used to run, like, race after race after race after race. And they said, just take your shoes off and run barefoot.
Yes, we ran on the streets barefoot, and I did that for a really long time. And I still walk around. My daughter's like, Mom, how are you walking on the street with no shoes? I'm like, if you only knew how much you played and ran on the pavement, not grass, and raced on pavement. So, that's our rule. That's
how you run and you walk back and you had to run again. You had to keep doing loops.
We just ran. We didn't even think about it. And didn't hurt my feet. My feet, you can tell, look like runner's feet. So I have to remind, when I go, you know, get them taken care of, I always remind the technician, okay, I have runner's feet. No judgment.
Yes. Exactly.
So how did you go from runner's feet and running, you know, all this time consistently to 230 over 100 blood pressure? And the reason why I keep asking this is because I want people to know that it can happen to the person next door. Do you know what I mean? Like nobody's immune
yeah.
to it. Something you just can't forecast.
Yeah. Undergraduate, I was fortunate to get a scholarship, ran track. So I was always active. Even after graduating, I always had some kind of form of exercise. Maybe not like marathon and like I'm doing now, but I was always, you know, two or three times during the week, exercising. And the transition was, and I think I mentioned it, the transition was when my children went to college. So not so much my, but I think it was my daughter because then they both were gone. And I said, okay, I need to find something to do, you know, to kind of still stay in shape. And that's where I saw, they said, if you can run 10 miles, you know, you can run half marathon. And I was like, well, I can run 8. I think I can probably do two more. But that's how I transitioned from probably more of a casual exercise to doing a little more training and trained for that first. So my first half marathon would have been my daughter's freshman year because it was up. And we and it had snowed. So it was, if you can believe it, we ran the next, you know, those races are not canceled no matter what the weather, except for when it's, you know, lightning and things like that. So I ran that race. And then a couple of weeks later, I had to have dental work. And, you know, they take your blood pressure to check and make sure everything's fine. So the first time the lady took it and saw how high it was, she was like, oh, your blood pressure's up. Are you on medication? I was like, no. And the arrogance in me was like, I just ran, you know, half my first half marathon. I am not sick. What are you saying? You know, just arrogant. I don't know another word for it except being arrogant. And so I had them take my blood pressure, 1, 2, 3. I think we did it like 4 times, came up the same number. So and the, that was the dental hygienist. And so the dentist came in and said, you need to go straight to the hospital. You should be in the hospital. And again, I'm being transparent. The arrogance in my head said, I'm not going to.
You know what? Honestly, I gotta step in right here because honestly, again, I'm one to try to understand the why, like where did that come from? And I don't know. I think part of why you even caught yourself saying, well, this is the only word that I could come up with is arrogance is because on some level, you know that that doesn't fit. And I think what's going on is you think that because you feel you was feeling that way, like there's no way that my blood pressure could be this way or that I could be unhealthy because we're taught that, like, if you're able to do all of it, like, the exercise is it. You know what I mean?
Oh, yes. That's why you can have the major runner. One, I can't remember his name. He had a heart attack in the midst of running. People were like, how? He's running.
What?
You know, he's exercising. And he had a heart attack and died. And they're like, wait, what? And then, you know, the other... the historical context of us in hospitals and having, you know, that in the back of your mind too. But what was wonderful was I didn't, and again, at that space where my head was still Eric, I was like, no, I'm not going to the hospital. But I did go to the urgent care and the nurse there, she was wonderful. She said, okay, your blood pressure's out of whack. Totally out of whack. And then demonstrated, she said, so what your blood pressure is doing, and she had her hand, or she might have had my hand. She said, every time it pumps, this is what it's doing. So I got it. I said, okay, what's the next, what can we do, you know, to get it down quickly? And she suggested, you know, taking medication, which I was fine with. But it, in hindsight, looking at what had happened, what probably saved me was the exercising that kept me from falling apart. So I know that saved me, but it didn't change those symptoms at all. To be honest, it did not.
It didn't change what symptoms? Meaning like the blood pressure?
Blood pressure being elevated out of control.
Like if you hadn't been active, it would have been worse on you, you're saying. So there is that element of like when you're active, it helps.
Right, and I had no symptoms. None of the kind of symptoms sometimes, you know, it's like, you know, high blood pressure is that silent.
Like headaches or blurry vision, none of that stuff.
No, nothing.
Okay.
Wow.
No symptoms. So that's why I was sitting in there and she said the number. I mean, they did the cuff. Then she did the wrist. That poor.
Yeah. Like, girl, you're going to need another equipment because I ain't buying this. And even they believed was hearing you when you was telling them. But after the fourth try, it's like, okay, that's it.
She's like, oh, okay. And she kept, and the numbers kept being the same because she wrote them down. And I had the paper where she was writing them down, same numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're already a little anxious going to the, you're a little anxious going to the dentist anyway. So I was like, maybe I was a little anxious and it tended to, but not that high. That's not anxious.
Right.
That's something else is going on. But they did put me on a low dosage of, you know, high blood pressure medication. And my question to her was, you know, once we get it.
Uh-oh, breaking up a little bit.
And she's gone.
I can't hear anything. I assumed it was just breaking up. Somehow
she's
she got disconnected. Okay,
yeah.
I wonder if it was like a battery thing or a location thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Hello?
Oh, there you
Hello?
Are. There you are. We
Hello?
Hear you.
Yes, you dropped.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I just saw it, and I was like, oh, what's going on? Now I saw that, is someone in California? Or we're all different? Okay.
The
only reason why I
asked is in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Okay, good. So, I was looking at earlier the hurricane that's coming to care that's in California. So I saw that and I was like, I hope nobody's in California because the weather is weather. But when I talked to the doctor, the first doctor I talked to, and she, you know, was explaining to me, you know, the medication, and I had like a million questions. That's my disposition. And I said, okay, so if I take this, this is going to, you know, take care of that. Well, how does that work? And, you know, she was trying to explain, but not really explain it in a way that really made sense to me that I'm going to be on it. She was like, well, we're going to have you on it for, you know, most people are on it, you know, for a pretty long time. I was like, not the right answer. I need to know what the end game is because I don't want to be on medication if I don't have to be, if there are other ways that, it can be managed. Because we know as we age, our blood pressure shifts anyway. That's the other piece, too. It does shift. It does go up and, you know, down depending on life events and, you know, other things. But she had no end game. So I said, okay, by the end of the year, I'm off.
Yes.
And that's when I started doing research and said, oh, there are natural ways that you can manage it. One of the easiest ways is with Celtic salt and the magnesium. Your magnesium is low. She never said, your magnesium is low. Even if I was taking a supplement of magnesium would have help to naturally bring it down. Or eating foods, of course, high end would have helped to bring it down. So
and
that's what I did.
Celtic salt. Is this Celtic salt something you put on the food, like how Himalayan salt, like that?
Himalayan salt is good. Celtic salt is better just because of the inclusion of all the four kinds of magnesium. And you can put it on your salt. The best way to consume it, if people are interested, is you put it on. You just put a little bit on your tongue when you eat, when you you're drinking water, because you need the soluble of the water to help it, disappear and go straight into your cells and your body. It helps with the cells and the mitochondria to digest it, because you do want the water to not just be there and pumping, which is going to, again, like I said, affect get blood pressure. Yeah. So she didn't, there were no, you know, there was just, that was not an option. And I when I was listening to you all early, mm-hmm. I heard Dr. Valentino say the industry mm-hmm. is problem
focus.
Problem solution, mm-hmm. problem focus, and then, okay, here, this is what you need to do.
Right.
And so, but in research, and I know mm-hmm. there are natural mm-hmm. doctors who focus on natural remedies. I just happened to be with a group that mm-hmm. was not their practice. So I'm not saying that, you know, that there are not, you know, medical doctors out there, but the industry mm-hmm. tends to be more, you know, problem focused and the onslaught. And so,
well, but you know what? Even if they were problem focused, like, okay, why is the solution drugs and chemically based, meaning some synthetic version of the real good stuff? Like, give me multiple solution options, right? Like you said, I get, what else can I take? Well, right. No wonder people are on this for a very long time, because this isn't helping the issue. That's why it's taking so long. Or because they're not changing their lifestyle. They don't know what else to do to help the drug help them. So, you know.
Right.
But Dr. Valentino,
well, it is about
56% of misdiagnoses are due to incomplete medical history. So what's happening is, and I think it's like mm-hmm. 81%, I have to double check the number, but I think it was like 81% mm-hmm. of African Americans were using the ER as their primary care physician. So now when you have scattered history and doctors have extra patients coming into the ER, remember that's 30 patients a day versus 30 a month or 30 versus one. So now they've got to come up with a quick solution because they've got a backlog of people that they still have to care for. So when I don't know your medical history, when I don't know what's not the norm, when mom is not truthful with self-reporting because she's embarrassed and she doesn't want the doctor to know what's going on with the kids, the doctor has a solution. And like I said, you know, there's a lot of pressure on doctors. I've said it over and over again. There's the suicide rate for the general population was like 28%, like in a profession. And for the medical profession, it was like 44%. So there's a lot of pressure on them.
I think psychiatrists is actually even higher than that, Coach. I think psychiatrists, if I recall correctly, are even higher, right? Because when you then start to look at MDs and the different professions that you know, are represented in that field, and then you start to really tease out that suicide rate, you start seeing psychiatrists are even higher.
Psychiatrists and urologists were the highest. And the reason why urologists were so high is because when people finally get to the urologist, the cancer or whatever it is so far along until they can't treat them. So they're continuously getting like terminally ill patients. So, the numbers were pretty high. But once again, I mean, the point that I was getting to, I didn't mean to interrupt for so long, but the point that I was getting to is doctors are overwhelmed because we're not giving them what they need, so they can't order the right test, they can't do the right treatment plan, et cetera. That's why we have 7 to 12 million misdiagnoses per year and 40 to 80,000 deaths due to misdiagnosis. So, but I'm sorry, go ahead. What were you saying, Dr. Harris?
And even to your point, it requires us, like you said, to make sure we have appropriate, you know, medical history. That means, yes, you need to get the blood work done. Yes, you need to ask the questions, you know, family history. Yet, especially before people pass away, I just had an uncle pass away, and one of the things, you know, that we're finding out, he was on 19 medications. 19.
Come on, that don't even sound right. That's not even right. Wow.
He was taking all of, and part of it was some of the recommendations that he was given. He had gotten to a point he just didn't want to do. So he was layering, of course, those symptoms with other things to manage other things. And so you've got one, you know, a medication, but then you're taking three others to manage the, you know, side effects.
The side effects of that one.
Right.
Wow. And then it makes me almost wonder, too, like, were they all from the same provider? Or, okay, maybe there was different specialists involved. But they all. That's the problem. Stop just medicating every little problem. Like, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
they were. They were.
I think that's this is tough.
It is. So, you know, so for me, going in, you know, making sure I had my questions written down. So if there are things that, you know, I didn't know, or to make sure I had, of course, my family history and my own history down, you know, so you're having a viable discussion with the medical professional. So, but for me, and I'll say to the people who are listening, you know, everybody's body, of course, is different. But having a conversation with the medical professional, if it's a traditional or natural focus, medications you know, still going to be helpful. So before trying anything, don't just go out and say, okay, I'm going to get me a bunch of Celtic salt and try. Make sure you're having a conversation with someone, you know, to make sure that that's going to be the best, because it may be, you know, maybe Himalayan salt is better for you than Celtic. Is strong. It's got 32 minerals. So if you're taking Celtic salt, guess what? You should be drinking around 2 liters of water a day, because you need the water to process the Celtic salt. So you can't just and say, okay, I'll take it, and you drink, you know, 16 ounces, and then you don't drink any water at all. Well, then you're going to be dehydrated. And then that's another, you know, whole host of, you know, symptoms. So you really have to be careful.
So I know you gave the example of putting it on your tongue. Is it also something that you could cook with or no? Like, it kind of sounds like you can cook with it.
Oh, yeah, you can salt your food. You know, I have a salt shaker that I use. Yeah, but you can put it in your food. Just remember to make sure you're hydrating appropriately. You know, some people say, you know, half of your body. But make sure you're drinking water. And you're not drinking it, I think, Ms. Jones, didn't you mention to me about the young lady that passed away from drinking water, too much water? She passed away for, I forgot what they called it. Was it water intoxication? Her circumstances, of course, were different, but the volume of water that she drank, her body could not process.
Mm.
Almost like alcohol intoxication. Our bodies are the same way in terms of processing. And I should have written down how many liters she had drank, but she was dehydrated outside and just kept drinking and kept drinking and not allowing her body to process it, allowing her body, you know, so that she could go to the bathroom to help it flush out, you know, what was going on. It was really sad. You know, some people call me and say, you're not drinking that much water. And when I'm running, we have, you know, you have to hydrate, but then you also have to be careful. So someone's saying, oh, we're getting these cups of water. And I'm like, they're giving it this amount so you don't over hydrate without the sodium and replacing the electrolytes that, of course, you're going to lose when you exercise.
The article says, unfortunately, you know, I need my glasses. I'm too vain. Wait. Unfortunately, that was the case for Ashley Miller, a 35-year-old mother who died of water toxicity after drinking 64 ounces of water over 24 minutes. I mean, over 20-minute period. There we go. Yeah, 64 ounces over 20-minute period. Yeah. She was on vacation with her family for the 4th of July.
Wow.
I don't even know how she was even able to do that. That much water in 20 minutes. And I guess she just kept drinking.
I'm trying to think of what is 60-something ounces. So I think, my bottle that carries 8 cups is like 70, whatever it is, something. That's like super chugga lug.
I just drank 2 33-ounce bottles of Smart Water. No, I'm just kidding.
but not across 20 minutes. I'm assuming,
20 minutes, right?
Right.
I hope you didn't drink it.
It may have been less than 20. Look, you got me scared. But, you know, Smart Water has extra stuff in it, so I might be okay. Yes.
It's got
electrolytes
in it. Yeah, it does.
I'm good.
Yes, it does. Yeah. so you have electrolytes that's going to balance it, and maybe she just had, you know, regular, you know, drinking water without the, you know, extra things that would help to balance, you know, the influx, the fast influx of the water. Yeah.
Wow.
And the next time, so that would have been after my first marathon, the next kind of aha was, I was getting some, I believe I was getting some life insurance or something like that. And the nurse came and she was like, oh, you know, your glucose is a little elevated. And I was like, oh, really? And again, that little arrogant button hit in my head. And I was like, I hadn't been feeling no symptoms of anything. And so I went back to my, I switched doctors at that time and went back to her. And she was saying, oh, yeah, it's a little elevated, and, you know, we need to do, you know, this protocol to see if we can get it down. And I like the way you said the full onslaught, because that's what it was. It was like the next day, everybody was calling me, you need this, you need that, go here, go there, go here, go there. And I said, wait a minute, let me take, let me just take a minute.
I'm sorry.
Hello?
Uh-oh. I don't know if we lost Coach KJ, but
sorry.
I think she was trying to clarify. Oh, there you go.
I was asking, who's everybody that called? You said everybody called, so who's everybody?
Okay, so a dietitian called, someone called from radiology because they wanted to, you know, do some scans of my liver, check your pancreas, and that's what I mean by the full onslaught. They were... I think they had sent a prescription to my pharmacy for, I believe it was Metform. I think it was Metform. They wanted me to get, and I forgot the name of it, where you have the patch and it comes up and it tells you what your numbers look like. They have a lot of different ones out now. But at the, I mean, it just felt like, you know, just the full, before I could even do my own research, it was like literally the next day. And I said, okay, let's just take a pause and let me do my own research and see, you know, what all is this. And I remember telling the doctor, I said, nope, we're not doing that either. We're going to pull back on, you know, and I've always eaten pretty good, but, you know, I have my moments just like everyone else, you know. So I said, okay, we're just going to pull out, you know, no processed. First thing was processed food. So, of course, opening up my pantry, I was like, there's nothing in here I can eat. So that was the first, you know. And you know, again, we, you know, have fruits and vegetables, but more fruits and vegetables and, you know, which would be the best fruit, natural, make sure, you know, if I was going to sweeten anything, it needed to be, you know, something natural, if it's honey or agave or maybe, even though naturally they have higher levels of sugar in it, it's still natural occurring.
That's right. That's different.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's not Splenda or, you know, some other, you know, form of sugar. And then the other thing that, and I think I have been doing a version of it, and I grew up with a version of it, was fasting. And I'll tell you a funny story. My mom was a single parent, so it was five of us, four girls, one boy, and she was pretty strict in terms of our eating. But again, I grew up at a time where we ate the three times a day, and then we were outside playing. You know, we didn't have technology. We didn't do a whole lot of, you know, watching TV programs. We were outside playing until the streetlights came on with no shoes on. But once we would finish eating, usually around 5 o'clock, and then my mom would always say, well, the kitchen is closed until the next day. So there were no snacks, there were no, and it was in essence, she was doing fasting, what, you know, kind of intermittent fasting, and we didn't call it that, but that's what it was. We wouldn't eat again for, what is that, we stop at 5, so we wouldn't eat again really until we got to school around 9. So that was that 12, that's almost 16 hours, you know, and you're giving your body time, you know, to, so So that was the other thing that I got a little more serious about, you know, the fasting, if I was going to do a 16-8 or 18-6, or some people do 20 and 4, you know, eat in a 4-hour window and then fast for 20 hours. And the combination of all that worked, you know, my A1C went back to normal, you know, just simple things.
Wow, this
no
is
salt.
So
you know, I gave up sodas.
What were some signs that you saw? Like, I know that that went back to normal, but what are some physical signs that you could, you know, that were different?
Once everything came back down.
Yeah, that's it.
I would say, you know, my sleeping was, of course, better. Sleeping was better. And by virtue of changing food and fasting, I think I lost about 25 pounds. So I was able to slim down a little bit, which helped with the running. Not as much, you know, weight on my feet. And that was the other thing. I think I had a long conversation with my doctor about, you know, well, African Americans, our body dispositions are different. And so, you know, I think she was looking at the normal BMI and looking at those numbers. And we had a bit of a discussion because I said, who is the population where these numbers came from?
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. So, you know, you have this number, and then we use that same number on everybody and not taking into account, you know, just simple body dimension, environmental, all of that. And I'm like, where did the number come from? Did it come from the CDC? Well, we typically don't participate in research trials anyway. So were we included in this population? I mean, that's the conversation I had with my doctor, and she's like, I just need you to lose some weight. I thought a reasonable weight for my height. So by virtue of, you know, changing some of those things, I was able to, you know, get my weight down, just manageable, not getting to a point where, you know, my weight, I would need to really, you know, make sure I'm eating enough nutrients. I did lose weight. And I've been able, a lot of the stuff that I gave up, I've been able to stay off of, you know, things like sodas. Oh, my gosh. We have those on campus. And every chance I get to tell my students, if you can stick to water and don't go to those machines because they're poison. And they're like, oh, Dr. Harris, don't say that. They're poison. I'm sorry. If you're drinking one a day, imagine after 4 years what that's going to do to your body. You know, having them kind of think about it.
They trust the system too much that because it's here, because the FDA has allowed it, that it must be okay. And, you know, it's the ignorance is not listening in. Like, I have a client who was saying something similar that, oh, I don't even eat that much. And when I really dissect what she ate, I found out that basically her dinner is spent eating vending machine stuff at her job. Even when I think about the foods that are available at hospitals, like, why would you, like, how dare you sell Coca-Cola and Pepsi and sodas? Like, how dare you sell, you know, cookies? Why is that here? Like, this is so obvious, you know?
Right.
And I don't care about, oh, they're going to buy it anyway. Well, don't let them buy it here in your home. You know, this medical center should be a home. It should be a place of example, you know?
Right. And it's great that you say that, because the next aha I had was when my son had to have brain surgery. And, you know, that we had had a CAT scan done before, but what we saw was, you know, little things. Doctor said, you know, just keep a watch on it. But the next time that we did take him back, he was off balance. And I'll never forget it, because it was Mother's Day. And at first I was like, okay, you know, you've been smoking or drinking or something, like that was the first thing that came to my mind. He was like, no, Mom, no, Mom. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this time he was being honest this time. But he had to have, yet to have brain surgery. And the first thing, well, one of the things I did was I was able to stay, you know, in the hospital with him during this time to look at what they were bringing him to eat, to look at the medications he was being given, you know, so that he would be able to heal quickly, but heal naturally. So we were very fortunate. He had great care, but, again, his mom was in the room the whole time. So if they brought something and I didn't know what it was, they had to explain it, and then he could decide if, you know, the pain he had was so much that, you know, he couldn't tolerate it, or he would, you know, take something else. But the food, we really attacked what food he was eating to help him heal naturally, and it worked.
Dr. Harris, I want to ask one quick question. From the time that you took him initially to the time that he had the brain surgery, how long was that time period or the time you returned back?
Yeah, so we started noticing symptoms. So that would have been Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Then Mother's Day was on that Sunday. So there were four. It was about 4 days. And I was trying to think back, what did I see anything before then? And I didn't. So 4 days before Mother's Day, started to notice, you know, he was a little bit off balance. We took him to the emergency room on that Monday after Mother's Day. And that was an all-day process for him finally to get a CAT scan. And so what they saw was what needed to be removed, probably the size of maybe a plum, so it was huge. And they transported him, so that would have been that Monday. Yeah, so that Monday.
Wait, but what was removed exactly? What did they find?
They found it was a benign tumor that they had to remove. They were able to see, you know, from the CAT scan, you know, the size of it, and it was right at the base, kind of behind his ear, but right at the base of his neck. So not quite on his cerebellum, but right there. And
now let me say this, because we got about maybe 15 minutes, so I want to make sure that the listeners, like, some of the questions that I can imagine they're asking, you know, gets asked. So, like,
yes,
the first thing is what. Were they able to say why? Because I hate that. Like, it just seems like there's never an answer for why this man has happened.
Yeah,
like,
and no, he said that it was just a natural growth. There was no, he never, I'm thinking of this when the surgeon came in, never an answer kind of came, what was, you know, maybe manifesting that. And we never, there was never a response that explained why he had that.
Okay.
So we didn't know if it was just, it was just a natural growth. What I will say is,
it would
say,
help, right? Like, it would help to know, because why don't everybody have natural growth? Or, like, is it that he got this extra thing in his body that helped that happen? Or does it get fostered by, like, eating this certain? Like, that would be helpful. That way then people would know, like, okay.
How do you know something
like, stay away from these foods, or, you know, like, in that way.
He didn't say. He just said that the sales just went haywire. We don't know why. We don't know if it was, you know, again, like you said, maybe it was something food. What I will say is he may have been, you know, something allergic, and we didn't know that he was allergic to it, you know. And we wouldn't have, because he had been hospitalized before, and one of the things they did check was that's how we saw it the first time, the little, where it was not quite the size when they removed it. That's how we saw it the first time. But there still was no definite, definitive explanation to, you know, why he had that benign tumor. What I will say is, and there might be some correlation to that, when I was pregnant with Christian, I had a benign tumor in my, I had a breast benign tumor, and we removed it. They were able to remove it look, and this is, again, kind of the arrogance in my head. I'm thinking, now I'm in first trimester. I'm not going to take anesthesia. So they were able to remove it because it was right on the surface. So when I thought back, I said, well, you know, was that connected? There could have been a connection with what I had to him because it was the same kind of, tumor, different place, but the same kind of tumor.
Yeah, whatever this growth thing is, sort of was connected to him because he's in your womb, right? You said while you was pregnant.
Right.
So he's made up of everything you're made up of.
That's
right.
That's right. And those cells found their way through the umbilical cord, and then we didn't see it manifest until he was, you know, of course, the age he was at. But, yeah, no, he did very well. I mean, the surge, we had great care. And, again, I remind, you know, people, if you have someone, you know, that can be that kind of surge, someone who can advocate, ask the questions, if it's a parent or if it's another relative, that I know that helped in his recovery. Because he was like, you all didn't leave. And I was like, no, we didn't leave. We know 100% that helped in his recovery.
Yeah, and honestly, I mean, think about it. People want to be respectful, especially culturally. I noticed the black and brown people, they are so respectful when it comes to the medical, you know, medical providers. Like, they revere them. You know what I mean? They don't want to look like they're questioning and you know what I'm saying, taking for granted, like, what they're doing to them. And so they have a hard time asking questions. And then you guys just, you know, I think especially because we just don't want to come across as looking dumb, you know what I'm saying, all these bogus stereotypes. We tend to not ask questions because we're figuring if they're talking to me, like, I should know this, right? So if I don't, it would be, you know, so it's like, you're right. You just need somebody there that's confident enough to be like, okay, can you speak to me like I'm a second grader? Like, can you speak to me in layman's terms? Can you cut the jargon, or can you say more about what you mean, you know?
Right. Right.
Other things that you feel like will help people, because you're actually right where we would start to ask, like, what kind of things, you know, would you recommend people do? So obviously, you know, having somebody with you who, you know what I'm saying, can speak to you when you can't speak to yourself, having to natural, you know what I'm saying, herbs and fruits and foods, you know, nutrients like magnesium that will heal you, like that works with your body, not something that was synthetically created. What other things can you say? Like, I don't know, faith-wise, a lot of people bring up that as a strong coping strategy. I don't know if that's something, you know, that...
Well, we did, and I was going to say, you know, we did, as soon as my husband and I figured out, I think us not really understanding the magnitude of the surgery until we got, because they transported him from the emergency room straight to the neurosurgical unit here in Charlotte, where we are. And it wasn't until we got to his room that we really realized, okay, he's in ICU. And it probably was a good thing that we didn't realize it and not panic, because we saw ICU, and he looked at me, and I looked at him, and I was like, he's in ICU. That's when I started calling the phone. I said, okay, Christian's in ICU, and tell everybody, and y'all start praying for him.
That's right.
Once we figured out, wait a minute. And then the surgeon, I have to admit, the surgeon was a rock star. He was fantastic. He came in.
Wow.
He explained. He told Christian what he was going to do. He told us. He said, oh, this is going to be a quick and easy surgery. And we're like in, by that time, kind of panic mode, like, oh, my gosh, he's got to have brain surgery. Yeah, he was a rock star. And Christian even himself was so funny because he had, so that would have been a week. We started seeing symptoms a week. He had the actual surgery a week later. He tells his coworkers, I'll be back at work on Monday. We leave the hospital on that Tuesday.
Wow.
So,
I'm wondering where he got that arrogance from.
now we really using that word, huh?
I'm just wondering.
Y'all love that,
guys. He said, I'm going to be back at work on that Monday, and they released him to go home. And, I mean, he was motivated. The physical therapist said, let me see you walk. Okay.
Yes.
Do you all have stairs in your house? Let me see you do stairs. The first thing they told him, he had to be able to get up and go to the bathroom by himself, no help.
Yes.
You know, those kind of things you don't think about. But, he could do it by Tuesday. We had him back at home, if you can believe it.
Hallelujah. That is incredible. It's like
and a month
real
later,
overwhelmed
see,
heaven with.
Yes, yes. So the power of prayer, we could feel it. He could feel it. We could feel it.
Yeah,
he could feel it.
I mean, in the end, think about it. It's all spirit. It's all energy. And so it's like you literally, I was saying, overwhelm heaven. And, I mean, this is how this happens, right? When you want something from your parent, you go back. You kind of stay on them. You stay on it. And then think about it. Or let's say you ask that one time, but then you see your friend, and then you see your cousin, and then you see your grandma to speak on your behalf to your mama. And then you see, like your auntie. Like that, after a while, you start to say, if you really want this, this is a good child. You know what I mean? So that's just beautiful. Wow.
Felicia, quick question. As we were talking about sports and bounce back and everything like that, is Christian an athlete, or was he an athlete at that time?
So I was going to say the other piece to that is he he's always been athletic, really. He ran track in high school, but he said he couldn't do it at college. It was too much training. He just couldn't do it. He was like, Mom, I don't know how. Yeah, I said the training, collegiate Division I, the coaches are crazy. So the training is crazy. So, but he played in the band. He actually played in the band, in the marching band, and got his exercise that way. And
what
that was the second thing. He played in high school the bass clarinet and the clarinet in the marching band.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And that was the second thing that we started doing was he and I. We exercised together. We started going to the gym every single day. So I know that also helped in his healing, the exercise. He embraced, keeping, and he's done very well. He's kept off of a lot of, junky kinds of food that sometimes at that age is quick and easy to fit, something quick and easy. He's done very well with managing his diet. To the point that, he's, keeping himself, healthy. Mm-hmm. Healthy as you can be as a young, as a young adult. But, he's done very well.
Felicia, what are some of the things he has taken out of his diet?
So, sodas, that was the first thing. Sodas, he loves sodas, of any color. So, Coke, Sprite, ginger ale. He took sodas out. He pulled back on, it's like trying to find an alternative for bread because he likes sandwiches. Yes. So he's pulled back on, how much bread he consumes. I found a couple of other kinds of bread, natural, we can find them, natural breads. You can, some of the ones that I tried to make, he didn't like the texture of it. So, bread is hard to replace, especially if you like sandwiches. He's pulled back on fast food, so not the McDonald's and should be saying, but fast food. What else has he pulled? He's not a doesn't eat a lot of sweets, so pulled back on like cake, candies, candy bars, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Stuff that, again, like I said, with the machines, he also works on campus in the environmental department. So there are machines everywhere. There are snack machines everywhere. So he's really pulled back on, eating those kinds of foods to stay healthy.
Can I ask you this? I know we only got a minute left, but I want to want to ask, because I noticed that when you replace those foods with something else, that meets that need. Like if it's candy and candy bars, but instead you replace it with, you got your bag of cherries or your bag of, blueberries, strawberries, or cut up apples, something that's easy. It could make it manageable. Was there something that he replaced it with too?
Yeah, so it, just what you said, we replaced it with, you know, he likes oranges, the little clementines, watermelon, of course, is great.
Yeah,
apples, any kind of fruits. You know, he not crazy about pineapple, but pineapple is good, too, for your blood pressure and, you know, to keep that managed and your cholesterol. You know, great. He likes, you know, if we can find some of the natural juices that don't have all the extra added sugar. There's some brands, some really nice brands out there now, you know, that don't have all that. And then trying to find them in appropriate packaging. So if you can find juice that's packaged in glass and not plastic.
Exactly, yes. Wow. They're not plastic,
you know,
yes.
And, you know, simple things like that, you don't, if you don't know, you don't know. You don't know
that
the water in plastic, depending on what type of plastic it is, that gets in our bodies. And, of course, our bodies have to digest it and try to clear it out, you know, your kidneys and, you know, your liver.
Yeah, that's
have
hard.
To process
that's why
the
now
body.
They
so,
say BPA-free. But, yeah, there's other ones. You just replace the BPA with the with something, some
right.
other bogus, you know, like toxic,
right.
like it's like just stop taking shortcuts, like for the love of money,
right.
like
it's a shortcut.
You write by people, you say you love your customers,
it's...
they're the ones paying you, like, but it's
exactly
funny.
Right.
But
well,
let me ask
right.
you, what
it
about the cartons? Are those okay?
The cartons.
I mean, are the cartons okay? I mean, they still have that plastic coating on the outside, but what about the carton?
So
oh,
if
carton.
It's biodegradable,
like juice in the carton.
Yeah,
yeah.
So
I,
if it depends on if it's biodegradable, I mean it's just as bad as looking at, you know, toilet paper and using regular toilet paper versus bamboo that doesn't have all the extra chemicals to make it white. You know, stuff as simple as that. And I guess I get frustrated. Yeah, I'm with you. Treat people right.
Right. And
no
customer. Come on now. The ones who actually have good money in your pocket. Like, that's crazy.
Look, I learned a lot today. I learned a lot today. You all are scaring me because, look, I love, now my
weekend
is not
about
fear.
It's about,
they come in a little plastic thing, so, you know. But between the magnesium salt for your heart, the watermelon for the magnesium, the Celtic salt, the... honey and agave and also
agave.
For sweeteners and also the doggone plastic. Man, why'd you have to do
the plastic.
I said something else because, everything comes in plastic.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm going to have to go to one of those juicers and get busy.
For the plastic, when you look on the plastic bottle, just look for it. It has a little emblem on the back and it'll say, if it's, you know, biodegradable, if you're drinking your water out of plastic, and it'll say it on the, when you go in the grocery store, just look on it and you'll see. So some of them won't have anything on it. Don't buy
it. And you know what? And also, whether it's got it on it, let's say it's got it on it and the person thinks they're doing well, please don't freeze your stuff in the freezer because then the ice, you see, then starts to come off at the plastic. You just don't want plastic in your body. Like, that's not something you're supposed to be consuming, period. You know?
Right.
You know?
And the last thing I'll say that my son took out of his diet was Pop-Tarts because he said Pop-Tarts has motor oil, something in it. He was like, Mom, get all the Pop-Tarts out of the house. I didn't even know that. And I was like, what?
Wow.
In the Pop-Tarts?
Wow.
Yeah, so Pop-Tarts, no.
That's
a shame. Take the heat.
Can I just ask you something? Did you say Pop-Tarts and motor oil?
Yeah, that it has it. She's saying that he said he saw that it has it in there.
Like the motor oil that you put in the car.
Like antifreeze.
That's why you can't read the ingredients, you shouldn't be purchasing it. And this is also like when you think about all these foods that are catered or promoted to children and teens and young adults, they all seem to have food coloring in it, from the chips to the ice creams and the, you know, cupcakes and the cereal. You know, if you should be getting your color from fruit. Like, I just saw my baby earlier. I had to tell her, oh, clean your mouth, baby girl, because the cherry juice is staining. Like, that's you don't need to get it from some synthetic chemical, you know, food coloring that they'll tell you in Europe causes ADHD. You don't need that. So we need to have a part two where we talk through all these natural solutions, you know?
Yeah. The name is propylene glycol, which is the same ingredient, of course, that they use in antifreeze. So
that's in a lot of ingredients. That sounds familiar.
It's in ice cream. It's in a lot of things.
Ice cream? I'm sorry.
It's not in all ice cream, Coach. She just said it's in some ice cream that you got to watch. You got to just watch.
Right.
But you can find good everything is the point. You can find good. You probably can find some good Pop-Tarts that's not by Pop-Tart. You know what I'm saying? You can find some good ice cream, some good chips.
Right.
That's it, you know? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we don't have to have a part two.
Yes, ma'am.
Dr. Howard, let me ask somebody. Would you come back for a part two?
Yes, yes, we needed more time.
For sure.
Yes, ma'am.
This is what people want. They don't just want to hear what not, because honestly, Coach, they don't just want to hear, at least I wouldn't as a listener, just want to hear what not to do. People know they ain't supposed to drink soda, but they don't know why. People know they ain't supposed to do, you know, that they know that the synthetic food coloring is synthetic, but they don't know what's harmful. So we need to start getting at, like, what to do versus what not to do. And if we're going to get at what not to do, why not to do it? That way people, it's less about fear and more about, like, ignorance is not bliss, because you will end up having to pay a huge doctor bill, which is the whole point of all of this, right? That's the point of these bogus ingredients. It's so you have to feed that industry, that wicked industry.
Right.
So we definitely need a part two, because I gotta go too right now.
Yeah. So I didn't mean to put you on the spot, Dr. Harris, but I just thank you so much for everything that you brought to the table today.
Yes.
I thank you for sharing your stories and being transparent. I thank you for reminding people that guess what? This could happen at any time. Sometimes there's no warning signs. There's no notice. So it's important to keep track of your health. One of the things that I always encourage people is keep track of your social, physical, and cognitive health, because when you see changes in those, if you're watching, heading towards a goal, trying to get something done, if you see changes in those, then you want to find out what is the underlying challenge or what is the core of the challenge. So once again, Dr. Valentina, do you have anything you'd like to say in closing?
Only that
Dr. Harris first. Do you have anything you'd like to say in closing?
Just, you know, take it, as we said before, you know, you can take it one day at a time. This can be very overwhelming, you know, to really shift kind of how you think about what you're putting in your mouth and what you're doing in terms of any kinds of symptoms or illnesses you may have. Just taking a moment and, you know, do your research, and you'll find there's a lot of good stuff out there, but we do have to do our research in order to find it. Got to dig a little bit.
That's right.
Dr. Valentina?
And we're going to try to, and I'll just add to that, and we're going to try to, or and we're going to try to make the search easier, because we're going to tell you what we do and what we know. And, you know, it's actually easier now than it's ever been. I think what's hard is more the psychological connection to change. But in general, you know, and then not knowing, like, you don't want to spend money on a product that, you know what I'm saying, doesn't use any, for example, animal products like if you want to go dairy free, right? You don't want to spend nothing trying to find out this ice cream, you know, replacement non-dairy ice cream without knowing that it's actually good. And, you know, so we will definitely help the listeners, but I definitely can say I enjoyed, you know, this call, this time, for sure.
Thank you so much
for everything. I can't wait to have you back next month, maybe. But I can't wait to have you back.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm so
I'm looking at my lotion in my plastic bottle, looking at my water in my plastic bottle.
That's right. That's what we have to start doing. That's what we have to start doing. Yeah, no, that's that. Yeah, that man is right, because it's man, woman that's doing this stuff that's not right.
Right.
So that's exactly the right thing to say.
Right, we have to read the label. Got to read the labels. Mm-hmm. Got to read
that's
the labels.
But as you
yes,
said,
ma'am.
Dr. Harris, and I thank you so much for this. One day at a time.
Right.
One day
that's
at a time.
Right.
Shift and the research one day at a time. Don't overwhelm yourself. Take one thing at
that's
a time,
right.
Or investigate one thing at a time. And, you know, maybe during the next conversation we can kind of segment things, like, you know, something for, I don't know, but, you know, something with regards to vitamins, something with regards to vegetables, something with regards to meat, or, you know, somehow segment it so that we can, when people listen to it, the recap, they'll know what particular area they're most interested in attacking or tackling or taking on at that particular time. So,
yeah.
Once again, I'm sorry.
We can do a whole segment on sugar.
That's right.
The history of sugar. And
you
are
trying to make me lay out on the floor and cry right now. As I'm thinking about going to get my dog on granola bars. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to get it this late. But I love those granola bars. Go ahead and tell me how bad they are.
No, there's some really good ones out there.
Them.
So it just depends. Right. It just depends on the ones you have. But there's some great ones. See, not saying you don't have to make you have to get rid of them. It's just get these good ones, get these right ones that taste better, honestly.
Okay, well when we do the next show, please tell me a good granola bar, because I'm eating my peanut butter crunchy. Yeah,
I got a cabinet full of them. So we gonna do that together, doctor.
Yes, ma'am.
All right,
yes, ma'am.
Everybody, happy August. I'm wishing you guys
a great
week next week, and thank you for everything.
You're welcome.
Right.
Thank you all for having me.
You too. Good night, you all.
Good night.
Mm-hmm.